The inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by MetLife. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll bring you special coverage of the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. From the Democratic Convention, we'll talk to Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy, Congressman Paul Tonko of New York, and Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire. But we start at the Republican convention, where we ask the question, how would you improve and rebuild the middle class? Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia and Fox News personality Geraldo Rivera had this to say.
I think the best energizer of the economy to create jobs is a major reform of the tax code. And when we do that, we put certainty in place for American corporations and this huge pile of cash they're sitting on. They'll take it to invest in the United States of America to create jobs, both for those folks that are out of work now, plus those bright minds coming out of all of our institutions. And I think middle-class America will be the huge beneficiary of that.
How do you feel that Georgia is doing in comparison to the rest of the United States in terms of its economic recovery?
Well, we've been struggling. Our unemployment rate's in excess of 9%, but there's a reason for that. We really got hit hard by the real estate boom and bust. And our real estate industry has not recovered yet. We're making slow progress, but we're not there yet. And that's what's kind of been dragging Georgia's economy down for the last 5 years now.
Well, that's a great question. I would like, for instance, the stimulus spending that happened. You know, I think that you can't generate jobs with government. Here's my idea. Let's have infrastructure rebuilding, but make the infrastructure that you are targeting, because it creates wonderful jobs, great jobs, let's make them entrepreneurs suggesting projects that they then have a fiscal interest in. Example, if this river needs a dam, let's have the river dam company. Here's the dam, and they're going to charge the municipalities downstream for the water that this dam or the energy this dam creates. Maine needs a road that goes, there's no road in Maine that goes east to west. One of the proposals is that it be a toll road created by private entrepreneurs. So that's what I would do. I would use, this town needs a bridge. Okay, let the private company build the bridge and let them have the toll concession or some percentage of it. So my idea is to tap the entrepreneurial spirit and give business people the incentive to do these projects. They'll do it better than government does it anyway. They'll come in on time. They'll come in on budget because it's their money they're spending. And then let them benefit from it. Let them, with a realistic cash flow analysis, all right, we're going to make back our investment in 10, 12 years, then we're going to be in the black. You know, whatever it is, I think that would be the approach. And I can't for the life of me understand why people on the Republicans are so afraid of stimulus spending that it has a bad name. The Democrats are so afraid that the government is not going to get the largesse that they object. But I'm just for America. I want to create jobs, and I think that this is a way. And my goodness, if you go to New Jersey, you go to any of these, go to where my wife's from in Cleveland, Ohio, the infrastructure is falling apart. We need the bridges. We need the highways. You know, we need these projects. Let them build a swimming pool, and you could charge the municipality for the swimming pool. I think that there's a way to capture both, you know, desires, the desire to put people back to work and the desire not to have government do everything, business do it.
As just a real quick follow-up, when we see jobs reports numbers, a lot of times what's referenced in there specifically are manufacturing jobs. Do you think we're doing enough in this country to make things here to sell not only to the United States but around the world?
No, but, you know, I was talking to Chinese TV yesterday. The fact of the matter is, if they can make it there for the person's getting $2 an hour and here they're getting $80 an hour, you know, you're going to have an outflow of manufacturing jobs. You're not going to be. And I don't believe in trade restrictions per se. I think that we can influence China's scale of pay by saying we're not going to allow you importing something. We have slave laborers, that kind of stuff. But that's kind of a marginal effect. I believe that. You know, China is going to be China. The United States has to emphasize what we're going to be the innovators. You know, Apple, all those ideas happened here. Unfortunately, they outsourced the actual building of the phones over there. But I believe that there will be sufficient innovations where we can compete even for manufacturing jobs. It's going to take a lot of mechanization, and it's going to take a lot of cooperation with labor, or between labor and management.
Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn also shared their thoughts.
There are a number of ways. One way to create middle-class jobs is to work on a bipartisan basis in favor of the President's American Jobs Act. It should be bipartisan to say that at a time when local and state governments are hemorrhaging teacher, firefighter, and police officer jobs, that we ought to work together to keep them working, keep them contributing to the economy. We ought to work together to support the president's effort to build on the surface transportation bill, which took 11 times to get extended and finally passed, to build infrastructure in this country, putting people back in a construction industry that has what? Something like 40% unemployment, putting them back to rebuild our bridges, our roads, our highways, our ports and our airports. So those are a couple of ways that we could put people back to work and focus on the middle class and do what we can to get the economy moving again. But what we've seen is intransigence. What we've seen is, you know, the party of no, not wanting to work with the president, even when he's offered proposals that have historically been supported on a bipartisan basis. These aren't proposals that were from Democratic think tanks. They came from both Democratic and Republican think tanks. I know, because when I was president of the Conference of Mayors, we focused on many of those same proposals going to the same think tanks, wanting to get something on a bipartisan basis.
Well, I think it's, get government out of the way, get the regulations out of the way that allows them to move forward. I think government has a role, and certainly as a mayor, those infrastructure dollars help me build my middle class here, because that creates jobs for me, allows private sector capital to be invested. Better education. I mean, a focus on education is the meal ticket to the middle class. I mean, anytime you get away from that, you start leaving people behind. And so it's almost like we need a new Marshall Plan to rebuild and strengthen the middle class, because that is the springboard to a better life.
Who's the best person for that plan?
In terms of presidential candidates? Oh, I don't have any doubt that it's President Obama. I think when you look at which party and which candidate spends more time worrying about the plight of the middle class, I think it's President Obama.
Then, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee and former Congressman Arthur Davis of Alabama addressed how the Republican Party can connect with middle-class voters.
I think they just need to show that the way to get jobs is not to raise taxes and increase regulation. The way to create jobs is to have an economy where entrepreneurs are honored rather than vilified and demonized.
Well, part of the connection is happening simply by talking about the Obama record. President Obama has failed the middle class. The Obama administration has failed to turn around the economy. They've failed to do the very things that got them elected in 2008. And you mentioned independents. I don't know that independents really fit one particular political niche, but they're often people who are frustrated with politics and business as usual. Well, you have an administration or a campaign in the Obama campaign that ran on ending business as usual. What do you have? 4 years of the same old Washington game. Intense partisanship, a campaign that's all attacks all the time, the usual distortions that they said they didn't believe in and wouldn't do, the demonization of the opposition that they said was destroying and polluting American politics. I think independents get that they're practicing the very business as usual they attacked.
We then caught up with Tower City, Pennsylvania, Mayor Dan Daub and Delegate Mike McMullen from Western Pennsylvania.
Mayor, welcome to the program.
I'm very glad to be here.
We are, of course, here at the last day of the Republican National Convention in Tampa. Governor Romney is set to make his acceptance speech tonight. What are you expecting to hear out of him this evening?
I'm expecting Governor Romney to really give us his vision of where America can be, all that we have not attained yet. I believe that Romney and Ryan are the team of bringing America back. We need a comeback. We need a turnaround, because unfortunately we're not on the right path. The last 4 years, the government has spent an awful lot of money to try to stimulate the economy. It has not worked. More and more people are out of work. People continue to pay higher and higher costs to try to make a living. They can't find jobs and they can't support their families. And so I'm really looking forward to an outstanding speech by Governor Romney telling us what America can be.
What are your constituents saying to you in Tower City about the economy?
People are frustrated. They're very frustrated because, like I said, you know, they're tired of paying higher and higher taxes and not getting anything in return. And more importantly, not having the opportunities to live the American dream, to go out and get a job, to go out there and lead a better life, get a better education, and to support their families. You know, I have two children, twins, just turned 18. They're going to be voting in their first election this year. And when they look at their future, I've taught them, you know, pay attention, get involved, ask the tough questions, find a candidate that best supports your views and where America can be. And unfortunately, there's too many people go away to college, get a degree, and because of President Obama and the spending that he has led, they can't find a job. They are unemployed or underemployed. And that's really not the American dream. It never was like that. It shouldn't be like that. And it won't be like that under Governor Romney.
Can you talk about the resolve of the American people in difficult economic times like these?
Well, you know what? I'm wearing a hat from the Yuengling Brewery. And when you talk about resolve, the American people are the people who know how to get things done. When they have a problem, they find a solution. The Yuengling Brewery survived Prohibition. The government taking away their ability to manufacture their product. At that time, it was beer. And so they manufactured ice cream and other products to sustain the family business. They're now in their seventh or eighth generation. It's America's oldest brewery. And they build it. You know, the government didn't build it. In fact, the government tried to take it away from them. So the American people, all through our history, have found solutions to problems and have weathered the storm and have found solutions that are more efficient and are able to take America down the right path. The government isn't the answer. Getting the government out of the way of people who have a vision, a dream for them and their family is what we need to make this country better.
Mayor Dobb, these are contentious times politically in this country. Can you talk about the need to work together, to come together collaboratively to address issues and solve problems?
I do think it is important that we have a more united country. Fighting, bickering, and debating one another constantly without achieving anything isn't getting us anywhere. So I do hope that whoever takes over in January, hopefully it's President Romney, will bring a tone and a tenor that will result in getting things done. President Obama promised to do that 4 years ago. He said it with rhetoric. He did not do the deed by doing that, walking the walk. Unfortunately, Washington now is more polarized than it ever has been. And we do need our leaders to lead. Just as Condi Rice said last night, you can't lead from behind. You have to take a lead, present a vision, and get people to work together. Politics is the art of compromise. It's finding solutions that maybe not everybody's 100% happy with, but it's something that will work for America. President Obama has taken his radical agenda and has tried to get it implemented, and unfortunately, he has failed. You know, it's unfortunate for President Obama, but more importantly, it's unfortunate for the American people, because we do need our leaders to lead and to lead us to prosperity and opportunity. And this president does not deserve to win re-election because he has failed to do so.
Mayor Dan Dobb, the mayor of Tower City, Pennsylvania, we certainly appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been joined by Mike McMullen, a delegate from Western Pennsylvania. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
So we stand here today on the last night of the Republican National Convention here in Tampa Bay. Governor Romney is set to give his acceptance speech. What are you expecting to hear from him tonight?
I think Governor Romney is going to set the tone and set the agenda for the next 67, 68 days of the election. He's going to be very direct to the point. It is about jobs, taxes, and the economy, but the bottom line is it's about jobs.
For everybody, the central issue is jobs. How do we get people back to work in this country, particularly the middle class?
Well, I'll put a spin on that in the sense is in Western Pennsylvania, very blue-collar type individuals, even in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we're 1.1 million Democrats and Republicans down. But at the end of the day, jobs in Western Pennsylvania, I know a lot of people out of work, underemployed, just stopped looking for work. But Governor Romney and Congressman Ryan are going to, day one, they're going to repeal Obamacare. And small businesses are not hiring, and if Obamacare stays into law at the end of the day, that's a job-crushing government mandate, and at the end of the day, day one, they're going to overturn it.
What kinds of jobs do you think we should be looking to create for the middle class? Infrastructure, construction, things like that, or something else, some other kind of jobs?
That's a great question, but at the end of the day, in Western Pennsylvania, Marcellus Shale is our gold rush. We are very fortunate. Governor Corbett from Western Pennsylvania got elected in 2010. We just signed a deal with in Western Pennsylvania with the cracker plant. We were competing with Ohio and West Virginia, but at the end of the day, we have 15,000 new jobs that are life-sustaining, and these are high-end jobs, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, from blue-collar to union construction to service industry-type jobs. So at the end of the day, Marcellus Shale, we have to tap the natural resources that we have, but also we've got to get a better tax climate for small businesses to hire more people.
Pennsylvania, the last several elections, has always been looked at as a swing state. Why do you think the Commonwealth, the Keystone State, if you will, is so important in these national elections?
Great question. The road to the White House is through the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. We have not turned Pennsylvania red since 1988, but this year we're going to turn Pennsylvania red for the first time since 1988. In 2010, we were the most Republican state with 1.1 million Democrats down. Governor Corbett, Senator Toomey, five new freshman congressmen, and we took back the state house. So it can be done, and it will be done on November 6th.
Now, this is not your first convention. Tell me how long you've been coming to these events and how they've changed along the way.
It's a good question. This is my third national convention. My first one, I was in my mid-20s in San Diego, Dole Kemp. We were 0-1 then. 2008, Minneapolis, McCain, Palin, 0-2. And the third time is going to be the charm, the R&R connection, Romney, Ryan. So they really haven't changed. It rallies the base. At the end of the day, it's surreal to me because as a blue-collar kid growing up in Western Pennsylvania, was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth like most people think we are, put myself through school, grew up in a union household. My brother's an iron worker. I get it. I'm from Western Pennsylvania. I'm a blue-collar Republican, but I'm excited to be here. It is an opportunity to represent my congressional district, and I'm excited to be here.
What made you choose the Republican Party?
I was the first generation to go to college. Grew up in a single household. My dad died at 15. Single mother raised, put myself through college at the University of Pittsburgh. I just think the opportunity to be a Republican, I call myself a blue-collar Republican. I've worked for everything I've had in life. Nothing was given to me. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Everything I've had, I've worked for. I've earned it, and I did build it.
Tell me about becoming a delegate. How did you make that happen?
Well, in Pennsylvania, unlike other states, it's a very every state is different. But at the end of the day, we have a process. We have to gather 250 good Republican signatures in our congressional district, and we have a filing fee of $25 through the Department of State. We have about 3.5 weeks to get the signatures, and you have to be organized. You have to have a small army, Jason, because in the middle of winter, that's when you're getting signatures. And it's not easy, it's not fun, but I had over 30 people circulate my petition for delegate alternate, and I thank them immensely. And it comes down to lot selection, and with a little luck, name ID, and good ballot position, that's how you win.
Mike McMullen, a delegate from Western Pennsylvania here at the 2012 Republican National Convention in Tampa. Mike, great to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jason. Have a good day.
Lastly, former Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour discussed his top concern in the wake of Tropical Storm Isaac.
Right now, my number one concern is crop damage, because this has not been a strong, powerful hurricane at all. I mean, despite what you see on television, it's been mostly a big rain event. There have been some winds, but in the 70s and 80s, and not in the 195-mile-an-hour category. We've had some lowland flooding, some highways, some county roads have flooded, but not a lot of damage. If we have big damage, it will be because this storm goes up through the agricultural areas of the state and dumps 12 to 20 inches of rain and knocks the value and volume of our soybean and cotton crops down enormously.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we shift our focus to the Democratic National Convention with Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member. And in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number for MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Governor Dan Malloy of Connecticut. Governor, first time, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you.
Let's talk about the issue at hand today. We're here at the DNC, Democratic National Convention, in Charlotte. What have you seen so far that's impressed you the most?
I have to tell you, this is my fifth national convention. Last night, the opening night, was the best opening night of any convention I've ever attended or seen on TV. Quite frankly, it topped most closing nights of conventions. I thought the First Lady hit it out of the ballpark. She connected with the TV audience, she connected with the folks in the hall, and she reconnected her husband with everyone as well. And I think it was a beautiful series of moments. My good friend Martin O'Malley, I thought, did a great job. Deval Patrick from the neighboring state of Massachusetts, what a message, what strength he projected. Ted Strickland, I mean, he was like a biology professor on a frog. I mean, he just took Romney apart. It was really quite amazing. And so I just thought it was a great night.
The First Lady did a very nice job of explaining to the American people who her husband is and the connection they have, the love that they have, and their path toward greatness on the American dream. How important is it for people to see the president as a person?
Well, I think it's darn important. I think that's why Mrs. Romney did her best to humanize her husband. That's why our First Lady did a great job in reminding people why they like Barack Obama. He is a family man. He is a traditional man. They have a traditional relationship. He cares for his children and takes care of them just as he cares for our country and takes care of it to the best of his ability.
Let's talk about the middle class. Obviously, that's the greatest number of people in this country, the middle class, people trying to get back to work, you know, facing a tough economy, facing job loss. What's it going to take to get people on the right path?
You know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the last president to inherit an economy as bad as the economy that Barack Obama inherited. We did not get out of the Great Depression in 4 years. There was a lot of dissatisfaction at this time in that election cycle, even way back with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But the reality is, let's remind people, we are far better off than we were 4 years ago. We have created 4.5 million jobs. The auto industry has been saved. One war has been ended. Another is in the process of being ended. These are amazing facts, and people need to be reminded of it, because Republicans want to remind everybody why they should be unhappy. But listen, this glass is well more than half full. If you want to ask, you know, people say, well, are we better off? Well, you know, ask Osama bin Laden whether we're better off right now. This is a president who has executed a foreign policy better than any president in recent times, quite frankly.
Let's talk about the education piece. That's a foundation of this country, educating young people throughout their entire lives. Where do you think the president should go in terms of education reform?
Well, listen, I think this is an education reform president. Arnie Duncan is speaking tonight, who has done a masterful job. I think the most activist secretary of education, who will go down in the record books, is the most profoundly effective education secretary in my own state. They were an inspiration for me to have the fight I needed to have with all of the arrayed groups to make sure that we passed education reform in Connecticut this past year. Very proud of that effort. Ultimately, we brought the teachers together. We were able to get a package that everyone could agree on, but it was not easy. And I'm not sure I would have undertaken that effort if I didn't have the support of President Obama and the president and the support of Arne Duncan in what we needed to do in Connecticut to reposition Connecticut. We have school systems that are failing to educate 50% of their kids. You cannot be competitive on an international basis if that's the product you're putting out.
In terms of education, what kinds of things should we be encouraging young people to study when they pursue education to put themselves in the best position to have a career that lasts decades?
Science, math, engineering. We have a tremendous shortage of engineers in this country. In my own state, we're going to be advertising for people to consider moving with their engineering degrees to Connecticut. We have great companies. If you want to, you know, Sikorsky, Pratt & Whitney, Hamilton Sundstrom, Electric Boat, and many other companies want to hire engineers right now. We have a gap of 43,000 primary care physicians in this country as we stand now, and as more people come into the insured arena over the next couple of years, that shortage will be even greater. We've got to get more people into nursing programs, we've got to get more people into nurse practitioner programs, and we have to get more physicians as well. But all of that is rooted in mathematics and science and engineering.
You're listening to AFG Inside Government, and we're here with Governor Dan Malloy of Connecticut. Governor, I want to talk to you for a minute about leadership. You know what it takes to lead a state. You're the CEO of your state, just like President Obama is the CEO of the country. So you can appreciate some of the decisions, the issues that come across his desk. The buck stops with him. The buck stops with you in Connecticut. What is it like to be the last person to make the decision before something happens?
You know, no one's ever asked that question quite that way. And I've never had to decide whether I was going to send Navy SEALs into a compound where each and every one of them could die. But I've had to make some tough decisions in my life as well. You get as much counsel as you can. You allow people to argue the case in front of you, and then ultimately you have to make a decision. And this president has made those decisions time and time again. Now, I'm going to say something. I think this president will go down as one of the great second-term presidents. Because, quite frankly, by his own admission, he spent more time trying to reach Republicans and reach consensus than was justified, since they really had no expectation of ever reaching an agreement with him. They have treated this president shabbily, perhaps more shabbily than any president has been treated by the opposite party in 100 years. And yet, here we are. We have Obamacare. People said it wouldn't happen. We have education reform. They said it wouldn't happen. We ended a war. They said it wouldn't happen. We got Osama bin Laden. They said it wouldn't happen. This president has called the shots and done the job, and he is ready for a second term.
You mentioned that second term, of course. If the president is reelected in November, what would you like to see the president accomplish during that second term?
More. I'd like to see more jobs, more job training. Better education and a continuing the process of reforming and modernizing education, particularly around science, math, and engineering. I'd like to see Republicans take a breath and understand that they once were the party that put the national interest above their own. The Democrats measure success by how well communities are doing. We need to remind Republicans that communities are not the enemy.
Let's talk about something that you had mentioned earlier, and that's sort of working with other people, working with the other side of the aisle. As a governor, you have to work with everybody in your state. How does that go? How's that going for you?
Well, you know, I was the first Democratic governor in 20 years. I do have a Democratic legislature. Quite frankly, some of those Democrats are more liberal than I am. The Republicans had gotten into a behavior pattern of fighting the legislative process because they had the governor to do the executive process. I've tried to bring people together. We had a jobs bill last October, a special session. We worked on it for about 12 weeks up to the session itself. Single session, one day. We had a bipartisan jobs bill passed with only one negative vote in the House and one negative vote in the Senate, something that they could not do in Washington. Now, they had a reason not to do it in Washington. They want to defeat this president. The people, the Republicans and Democrats in Connecticut's legislature understood that putting people back to work was the number one goal. That's what we need to do in this country.
Lastly, Governor, what is your favorite thing about being at these conventions?
You know, this, if you're a political or government junkie, and I am, this is where you go to recharge the batteries. But more importantly, if you believe in the process and you believe in progress, this is where you get the batteries charged as well.
Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy, certainly appreciate having you on the show and looking forward to having you on again.
Absolutely. Great to be with you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll continue from the Democratic National Convention with Congressman Paul Tonko of New York.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number for MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Congressman Paul Tonko, representing New York's 21st Congressional District. First time on the program, Congressman. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason. It's an honor to be with you.
So we sit here today on the final day of the Democratic National Convention. There is a big, big night ahead of us. What are you expecting to see?
Well, it's a big night ahead of us after two tremendously powerful nights that have come already. And I think to put the entire convention into context, it was Michelle Obama delivering what was a very emotional, heart-wrenching, warm reflection on the president and how he grew to be the masterful and sensitive, more importantly, sensitive leader that he is. And so she provided the personal perspective. Last night, the professor, the teacher of President Bill Clinton, did our classroom test and said, okay, truth time. Here's all the issues. We went through all the issues and did the scorecard. And so that was the facts as they relate to the politics. So we had the personal, warm and fuzzy. We have the facts. I think tonight we're going to hear the vision. The vision for the rest of not only his tenure, which would be now a second term, but also the vision beyond that, so that we plan accordingly for a stronger economy. And he has been about reengineering our economy, which is important, investing in our economy so that our brightest days, our most promising days, lie ahead of us.
One of the things that came out of the Republican convention last week in Tampa was it was short on specifics. What are you expecting from the president tonight in that regard when he lays out his vision?
Oh, I think he'll first give us perhaps a quick rundown of what we heard last night, just where the facts are, who's been twisting the facts, and then make that very clear and then go forward and say, here are the options. You know, how do we get to resolve the deficit and at the same time invest? And I think you can do both. I'm all for belt tightening, but it can't come at the expense of sound and worthy projects into the future. So that with approaching and attacking waste, inefficiency, outmoded programs, you belt tighten. So you cut where you can so that you invest where you must. And the invest where you must would include research, R&D, training of our workforce, retraining apprenticeship programs, education, higher education. These are the elements that require our investment, all while we resolve our deficit. And I think if we do it correctly, we'll have grown a full agenda for jobs, which is the best way. Putting people to work is the best way to solve the deficit.
In the 21st District in New York, you represent Albany, Schenectady, Troy, and some other places. Pretty typical, standard, middle-class communities.
Absolutely.
What are your constituents saying about some of the things that you just mentioned in ways to kickstart their lives, their economy?
Right. There's no escaping that the hottest issue yet today is jobs and the economy. What they're asking for is the potential to continually grow our regional economy. I have the good fortune as an engineer to have committee assignments on science, space, and technology and natural resources that enable me not only to utilize my own strengths in career opportunity as an engineer in the past, but in my policy concentration, because I served in the New York State Assembly where I did a lot of work on environmental and energy policy, and then left that arena for a year to become president and CEO of NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, where we did the program implementation following my many years of policy development. So all of that being said about my own background fits hand in glove with the district that I represent that has been touted by Brookings Institute, Tech America, The Economist, Forbes Magazine, ABC Nightly News, CBS Nightly News, as the hottest property in the country for the fastest growing jobs in clean energy, technology, innovation, and ideas.
You have led right into my next question, which is the kinds of jobs that we should be encouraging, particularly our young people, to get into because of the type of background that you have in engineering, which is a very employable career. There are a lot of job opportunities. It takes a lot of studying and a lot of effort to get there. But once you are qualified, there are a lot of opportunities out there. Do you think that we're encouraging our young people enough to consider those opportunities?
Right. I think we can do a lot more. I think there has to be awareness struck. You know, when I hear students say, and when I was a student, when I heard, when I listened to myself or I heard my colleagues speak, if they said they wanted to be a teacher, I bought it. I thought it was a credible statement because you saw the profession in practice. Today, there are so many careers that children don't know about, young adults don't know about. And so the partnership with the private sector, with the science community, is absolutely incredibly important. We as a society, as an American, as a United States of America, we have a very shaky ground in terms of the numbers of engineers and scientists we're producing. Of any college graduating class, coast to coast, we're about 4.5% engineering grads. After that, you look at the European cultures, and it's around 14 to 16%. Asian, anywhere from 18 to 20%. We are woefully underproducing, so we have to do that. Look, there are investments that we need in our innovation ideas economy. We need to do the physical infrastructure, the capital infrastructure, and the human infrastructure. We can't walk away from those investments because when we looked at the global race on space, Jason, in the 60s, which, by the way, inspired me to look at politics and inspired me to walk down the path of engineering, when we competed, we rolled up our sleeves after a Sputnik moment when we dusted off our backs, off our backside, and said, never again. That landing on our seat of our pants was a good thing in retrospect because we were motivated, charged, passionate to win this race with Russia in the 60s. And it unleashed untold amounts of technology. Today, we have that same challenge coming from a rather youthful president again. And are we going to enter in this time with many more competitors? And whoever wins that international race on innovation and ideas will be the kingpin of the international economy. That's why it's so important for us. And it's why the president last night, President Clinton, was touting the virtues of the first term of President Barack Obama. And also, I would argue, it's why this president needs to be reelected, but also have a Democratic-controlled House because of the partnership he had that drove the 4.5 million jobs that were created over 29 consecutive months, because of the soundness of policy that was brought to Congress by the president and acknowledged and done. These last two years have been dreadfully sad from the American worker perspective. It's putting partisanship ahead of partnership. Wrong thing to do.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Congressman Paul Tonko, representing New York's 21st District. Congressman, on this idea of job creation, especially in some of the areas that we've been talking about, there is a model employer, if you will, who can provide a lot of those job opportunities, and that is the federal government. Tell me about federal service and how utilizing what the federal government has to offer, not just as an employer, but as a service to the people, how that can really help kickstart the economy.
Oh, absolutely. I think a number of the improvements that we made with the Wall Street fiasco, you need to bring in a regulator. You need to make certain that the cops are on the beat, so to speak, as the trading goes on and as all these the workings and functionings of the financial sector take hold. We should have learned lessons. We did Wall Street reform. We need to have the regulator on the beat. We need to make certain that there's investment in research and all, like NIH, the National Institute of Health. When I first got elected, I went there for a tour. The workers were amazed. They were joyful that science and lab work was coming back, research to cure diseases, better treat diseases, detect diseases. These are important things that government can do. You know, this condemnation of the public sector. You know, I've worked in public sector all my life, and I will hold my track record up to anyone for any scrutiny. Upteen hours of work done to defend consumers, to protect whatever, water supplies, to do all these good things. Public sector employees making America work. I mean, that's the virtue of the public sector community, I believe. Overseeing, enabling, empowering, all of these active verb nouns that are absolutely essential to the growth of our economy.
As a public employee yourself, as a servant of the people, how does it make you feel to see public employees, federal workers being sort of thrown into the political fray almost like a football?
Well, you know, it really troubles me, because it's a reach to that is unwarranted and unjustified. You know, it's to suggest, when we go cutting deeply into these programs, that A, the programs have no value. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And B, that the worker caused the problem. We know from history now, short-term, long-term history, what happened. We had President Clinton, who spoke to us last night, talk of the strength of the economy when he left office, the weakness of the economy when he assumed office. We quadrupled our deficit in the years just before President Clinton assumed office, doubled it since he left. That's mismanagement of resources. And then we reach to the worker and say, now you're the solution. That is basically insensitive, immoral, and un-American. What we ought to do is find ways to better steward the monies that we put into the federal budget. We know what the dilemma was in the last recession. It was doing a tax cut for the most wealthy in society, the highest income strata, without a payment mechanism. We did it and said, well, somehow we'll figure how to pay for this, and we never did. And we fought two wars offline. So they were never on budget. What do you think would happen? So we went trillions into losses and now crippled this American economy, brought it to its knees. We can ill afford to do that. And it's why the president last night, President Clinton, on behalf of President Obama, indicated, take the measurement here, do the litmus test. And if you failed, then you need to fess up to the American public. We know now that they really drove the car into the ditch. They don't deserve to have the keys back to the car. And we've had 29 consecutive months of private sector job growth that was empowered by public sector growth, that was doing programs that enabled that to happen.
before we came on the air, you and I were having a conversation about how lucky we are to be here at a political convention, something that very few Americans get to see, get to be on the insides of these walls. Tell me what it means to you to just participate in the process.
I think what happens is you develop this partnership. There's a synergy that comes of these conventions, and it enables you to throw your piece of the puzzle, your strength, and to speak anecdotally for your district's sake. And it builds that map of America. It builds that sense of community of which the president spoke, President Clinton spoke, and which President Obama embraces. We are better when we have the all of us, when we're in this together outcome, than doing it alone. Self-centeredness doesn't build the America we know and love. Community sense does. The Democratic majority that I served in the 111th Congress needs to come back. We need to bring back a Democratic majority to empower this president. He had asked for many great reforms in his first 2 years in office. It happened because of a partnership. Partnership was then displaced by partisanship. And it's a sad outcome that boldly they stated they would not give this president one bit of progress. Why? Because it was about taking away his job and at the expense of millions of Americans who required a job that we could have helped create an environment to secure for the American public.
Congressman Paul Tonko, representing New York's 21st District. Congressman, great to meet you here this week, and thank you for coming on
Jason,
the show.
Jason, it's been a pleasure. It's great to share a conference space with you. It's been a great convention, and we look forward to the rest of the 60 days that remain just about before Election Day.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll finish up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention with Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number for MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Senator Jeanne Shaheen from New Hampshire. Senator, welcome to the program.
Very nice to be with you.
Tell me what your reaction is to the first round of speeches last night here at the Democratic National Convention.
It was a very exciting night last night. I think people were energized. They left feeling hopeful and optimistic and excited, not just about reelecting Barack Obama, but about the future of this country. Michelle Obama was terrific, talking about what she and Barack had experienced growing up in this country, the fact that they have lived the American dream, and how only in America could that be possible. I thought Mayor Castro from San Antonio was terrific, again, talking about growing up in a family, a second-generation Mexican family in Texas, and what a difference it made to be in America. And we heard Lilly Ledbetter talking about why it's important to make sure that women have equal pay for equal work. We heard from a young mother who talked about her daughter who was born with a congenital heart defect and how without the health care law that means that insurance companies can no longer put lifetime limits on health care for people. Her daughter's going to be able to get the care she needs. So it was a terrific lineup, and I think really drew a contrast between what we saw at the Republican convention last week, because what we heard last night was about hope, about a vision for this country that opens the doors of opportunity for everyone, not a vision that says only if you're rich and powerful and the top 1% do you have the opportunity for a strong future.
Senator, what is the central issue in New Hampshire ahead of Election Day?
I think in New Hampshire, like everywhere, people are concerned about the economy and about job creation and about what the specific plans are to address that. Again, we heard from a lot of people last week, but we didn't hear a lot of specifics about what the Romney-Ryan plan is going to be for job creation. We know what his record was in Massachusetts. We saw it in New Hampshire. Massachusetts was 47th in job creation when he was governor. So we haven't heard any of those specific plans.
Specifically from President Obama, what are you expecting to see to get the economy going in the direction it needs to go?
Well, I think he's going to continue to talk about the kinds of policies that he supported as president. We've had 29 consecutive months of private sector job growth, over 4 million jobs. Now, it's not enough. We've got to do better. But we're moving in the right direction. Without his rescue for the auto industry, we would have lost in New Hampshire. We've got about 26,000 jobs that are dependent on the auto industry, and that's in New Hampshire. So there were over a million jobs on the line with the auto industry. They're coming back. They've come roaring back. You know, one of my favorite bumper sticker lines is Joe Biden's about Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. What else do you need to know?
Senator, I want to shift gears before we let you go here for a minute and ask you about the federal workforce. As you know, federal employees are often thrown in to the political debate. And I just want to know what your thoughts are on the work that they do and their role in our government.
You know, I was a governor in New Hampshire before I got elected to the Senate. I understood then as governor, and I understand now as a senator, that our public employees are critical. They work hard. They believe in what they're doing. Most of them are working for less than they might be able to make in the private sector. And, you know, are there places where we could do a better job of saving money and being more transparent and more accountable? Absolutely. And we need to focus on that. And I think most public employees support that because they understand that's in everybody's interest and they're trying to do the best job they can. And what we don't need are people in the White House, people in an administration that denigrate public employees, that fail to recognize the important contributions that they make. You know, we just saw Hurricane Isaac go through the Gulf. I didn't hear anybody in Florida or the Gulf Coast saying, go back home, FEMA. Send those public employees home, the firefighters and the police who are all out here to help us. What you hear is people calling for those public employees who say, we need your help because we understand how important you are to our communities.
And similarly, at this very event, the Democratic National Convention with the police and the security forces keeping all of us safe here this week, that's something that no one would want to go away.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to recognize that and to appreciate it.
Senator Jeanne Shaheen from New Hampshire, we appreciate your time coming on the program
today.
Thank
you. Nice to be with you.
Thank you to all of our guests this week from the Republican National Convention, including Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, former Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Also thank you to our guests from the Democratic National Convention, Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy, Congressman Paul Tonko of New York, and Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by MetLife.
planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage.